Hey, welcome
Love
to Blog
Talk Radio.
I do that every time, don't I, man? Mm-hmm. Hey, welcome, everybody. Mm-hmm. This is Blog Talk Radio with the Minneapolis, you know, national. We're national now.
That's right.
We're not just doing Minneapolis.
We big boys.
Yeah, we national. National Mad Dads. Blog Talk Radio. And you're going to be looking forward to talking to Mad Dads all over the country. So our topic today, we're going to be talking about youth violence and solutions. And I had the opportunity to get some really good information when I went to the Youth Crime, Violence, Drugs, and Murder Conference November 17th through the 18th at Greater Friendship Missionary Baptist Church, hosted by Uhuru Solutions. Had a great opportunity to get in there and really hear, and I want to thank Kelly Hardiman and Deaconess Ara Hokes and the Greater Friendship Missionary Baptist Church and also the Institute for Education Services. I want to say big ups to Pastor Brian Heron and all the folks that were involved, Pastor McAfee and the guest speaker, Judge Lang, and Pastor Bethel. And there were just Marvin Clark, Raheem Jenkins, Wallace Gator Bradley, and Senator Hayden, and Bobby Joe Champion, and of course, the pastor of Greater Friendship, Pastor Billy G. Russell, as they came in and talked about solutions. And one of the things we talked about is that cradle to prison pipeline and how that works. And what was interesting is that if your kid goes to in foster care or any of that, it is difficult to get your kid out because the services want to keep your kid for as long as they can to put them on those services so that those foster families can continue to make that money. But if you say, my nephew or my cousin wants those kids, that's a problem. You can't seem to get your kid out. And they talked about that industry has become an industry now where they take your kids and they just keep them and they warehouse them.
Well, I understand what you're saying, VJ, and that's quite true because I haven't been a victim of both adoption agencies and the Department of Criminal Justice, you know, and from juvenile all the way into adult. I understand, you know, that once they let them get you, the recidivism rate is just so high because they build you up to fail, you know. I mean, at one time, the penitentiary's whole focus was on rehabilitation. But now those who run the Department of Corrections throughout this great country of ours, all of them emphasis now is on containment, confinement, you know. It's more about let's take them out of the street, take them up out of society, and just lock them down. Because, like, the various programs that used to be offered to the Departments of the Corrections and the vocational training, the GED programs, the higher learning programs such as AA degrees and BA degrees and stuff like that, those are being taken out of institutions now in wake of the overcrowding and the lack of fundings and the lack of officers and that type of stuff.
Well, one of the things I want to talk about, too, when we talk about youth violence, we need to talk about everything that's going on. And we need to make sure we understand that there's an issue that goes way beyond just our youth being violent, but it goes into the what happens with the low birth rate. Right now they're saying that 5.8 ounces that's underrated.
That's underrated.
That's low. And a lot of our babies are being born at that rate, but they don't have insurance. They don't have all the nutrition that they need. The mothers don't have all that they need, and that's a big problem. What happens when you birth a baby that's under the weight that it needs to be? That causes a real problem in terms of taking care of that baby. If you don't have insurance, you can't go to the proper doctor that you need to go to get the things that you need to get. And so, therefore, you're creating more trauma in your family and within your family. So it starts there. It starts at birth. You know, Gil, when you were born, your family was traumatized already.
Yeah.
You were born into trauma. You were guaranteed that you were going to be set off to fail.
Right.
You were guaranteed. And so many of our kids have been guaranteed to do that. We got callers in the line. I'm going to go to one of our callers here. and that is number 0522. You're on Blog Talk Radio. How you doing? 0522. You hung up on me. Didn't want you to do that. Now we're gonna go back to you, Gil, because what I want to talk about is, and we encourage you to call 347-215-9262. That is our call-in number. Feel free to call in. Don't hang up if I say your number. Just, you don't have to say anything. We'll move on to the next caller. I think there's a button you push if you want to talk. So you just push that button if you want to speak. I want to talk a little bit about mental health. How does that play a role in our families and youth violence? How does mental health play a role?
Well, mental health plays a very significant role in our families, VJ, because, you know, you got to understand that, as you know, growing up in the Black community, it's a lot of things that we suppressed. You know, we were told not to speak about. You know, we was told not to speak about our crazy auntie. We was told not to speak about our homosexual brothers. We was told not to speak about the different, you know, behavior malfunctioning that people had in our families and stuff like that. These things were supposed to be swept up under the rug and kept off inside of the family and stuff, you know. And these things here greatly increased as we start coming up, because the same things that my mother taught me, I taught my children, you know. And a bad thing about that is that now we are starting to feel the fruits of that being misinformed by misinformed people. Now we're starting to feel the effects of that.
And the effects of that is the mental health effect, the fact that there are more guns available to our kids than are available to other kids. I mean, we can get a gun quicker than we can get a vitamin pack or some vitamins or some fruits and vegetables for our kids. We can get a gun around the corner, there's no fruits and vegetables around the corner. Also, foster care. Foster care is a big industry for our kids.
That's right.
It's a big industry for our community, and it contributes to the youth violence in our community. I'm going to go right to a caller we have online here. Your number is 4294. How you doing, caller? Thanks for checking in.
How you doing, Brother VJ? This is Brother Damon.
Hey, Brother Damon.
Oh, man. Hold up, man. Hold up. Brother Damien Rouse.
Damien Rouse. Big Daddy.
The miracle man. The miracle man is back.
He's back.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Hey, Damien, go ahead and, you know, share, you know, the topic is cool, but, you know, you got a testimony. And this is going to be recorded. This is going to be recorded for anybody to go back and listen to. And we just have to stop for a minute from our topic and take time out to say, we are so proud, man, that God spared your life and gave you another chance, man, to do what you do so well, man. And that is help other people. We're so proud.
Yes. So the pretty report I wanted, about 3 months ago, my stomach was hurting. I came to the hospital and found out that I had leukemia and stuff like that. So they gave me the chemo stuff, and the chemo stuff kind of put me down, made my kidney stopped my heart. They had me on a life support machine. But I wouldn't give up, you know, with people like you and another mad dad came in and prayed for me and stuff like that. And one thing I told him, I said, I'm going to fight this. I got to come in first on this thing. I can't come in second. And during that period of time, things just got better. God just has been delivering me from that. You know what I mean? Because I knew I was in a place. It was like a dark place and a light place. And I was kind of drifting over to the dark place because it felt comfortable. But one thing my pastor, Betty, told me, she said, you stay in your lane. I kept on hearing that. And I went over to that other lane, and I would just sit there, and I heard God speak to me as clear as day and told me, do you want to live or do you want to die? And I said, I want to live. When I said I want to live, my eyes open, and I seen the light, you know. So I know it's a God today, you know, and God has truly been blessing my life. You know, I'm at the hospital right now, so I'm doing a little treatment. I'm walking on my cane now, moving around, got all my health back, got my senses back, ready to come back to work, you know, do some small work around the office and stuff like that. But God is good. And the only thing I could tell people today, especially I had a kind of experience when I was in the hospital, if you don't got your business in order, like who's your power of attorney or somebody that's going to be in charge of you, the hospitals can do anything they want to with you. If you happen to go up under or your body stops, So I'd be surprised people get somebody that you could count on, that they can be there for you. And I thank God, VJ, that you was there for me and took responsibility of that. And you had me do things that you think people do things. And I know I'm here today because I had some people around me that love me.
Wow, man. And it's, man, when I seen you this morning at the bottom of the steps, man, it just it reminded me of how close that you came to not being here anymore. And it was just sad, man, that we would have meetings and it just seems like when people, we'd say your name, everybody gets sad because we didn't want you to leave, but we had no power. We knew it was in God's hands. And when we seen you make that comeback, man, we was happy. And we're gonna celebrate. You're going to be at the support group tonight. We're going to celebrate that with you, man. We're excited to see you tonight at 5 o'clock at the support group.
All right, then. And Gil, keep on talking. You sound like a professor.
We love you,
man.
Right.
Love you, man.
Love you.
All right, bud.
That was Damien Rouse. He made a comeback. He made it when others thought he wouldn't make it, man.
That's right.
Folks tried to give up on him, but God didn't give up on him at all. And going back to, and God bless you, Damon, going back to youth violence and what creates it, Judge Lejeune Lang came up with some real positive things that she shared with us. And one of those things she said is that teenagers are leading the household now.
They are. Because the family, the mothers and the fathers are scared of them.
Well, you think they're scared of
them? Yeah, they're scared of them.
Why you say that? Yeah.
Because, you know, like, you have, you know, like, we have children being raised by children. And I'm saying that because, you know, like the Bible says that, you know, when you was a child, you thought like a child.
Right.
And we have a lot of adult people who are misinformed adults, who are uneducated adults. You know, like when I was coming up, I'm 57 years old, VJ. You 56?
I'm 56, sir.
Okay. And so when you was coming up, you know, even if your parents didn't have a college education, your father knew how to work with his hands. You know, he had enough skills to go out there and work for a living.
Yeah.
You know, he worked construction. You know what I'm saying? They worked those manual labor jobs. You know, to provide for their families and stuff like this. They had the they had the mother wit and the earth education. The repetitive behavior they seen with their fathers, their grandfathers, their uncles, and their brothers. And so they emulated those actions and those behaviors and stuff, and they brought about a foundation within their families. You know, they understood that they had to take their church, their kids to church every Sunday, send their kids to church every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they didn't go to church themselves, they made sure their wife got up and took the kids to church and stuff like that. They gave the church the kids the money and things like this. So, but now we have kids that's raising kids that have no idea of what bringing and what the responsibility of bringing up children are.
Here's something that's very interesting, and I didn't even know this until the judge talked about this. She says that now what they're doing is telling the moms that when foster care takes your kids, they're telling the moms that the kids told them that they're having a medical reaction to mommy.
What do you mean by a medical reaction?
That when I'm around mommy, I am not healthy because I have a medical reaction, so I need to stay with the white foster families.
See, but, you know, that's because that's, you know, like, VJ, that's a good, that's another thing between good hair and bad hair. You know? Now we done fed out, we know, at one time, you know, we was frying our hair. We was processing our hair. We was doing all type of stuff because we always wanted to emulate because they thought that straight hair made you smarter. Straight hair made you look smarter. Light skin made you better. You know, so now we have these institutions that are feeding these things off into our children's heads in order to lay up here and perpetuate the things that they're doing, you know, the things that they're profiting from. You know, I mean, our kids don't wake up in the morning talking about they got HMOD and all those old crazy alphabetical diseases and psychological problems that they're supposed to have, you know. You know, if I had a problem waking up in the morning, my mama told me, boy, you had to get in the bed. If you go to bed at 8 o'clock, you better get your butt up in the morning. You know what I'm saying? But you're staying up till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning and stuff. Yeah, that's you having a hard time. But now your kid don't get up in the morning and say, well, he's got a sleep deprivation or something like that. You know what I'm saying? He's going to appeal to give him.
Mm-hmm. So all those things that we don't know about, that the good judge able to inform us that, how could you tell a mother that your kids have an allergic medical reaction to just being around you? And so, therefore, they need to stay where they're at for right now so that we can keep getting that money.
That's right. That's planned to see.
How does that that contributes to youth violence? Because if you can't be with your mama and you can't be with your daddy, aren't you going to be hurt? Aren't you going to be traumatized? Aren't you going to have pain? Aren't you going to have suffering? Won't that make you angry, and won't that make you violent?
Yes, it will. Because, you know, speaking for myself, VJ, I was in foster care. And now I'm old enough to lay up here and reprocess those emotions and those feelings that I had and the violence that I went through, you know, the anger management, you know, that I had to go through in order to lay up here and bring myself back off into the reality and the fact that it wasn't those people that I had, that they sent me to that was at fault. But I had a very, very violent streak inside of me. I didn't care about those foster people because I thought my parents had rejected me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I became of age that my mother explained to me how she fought so, you know, vehemently against the DFFF to get me back. But I didn't understand that. All I was understanding, 8-year-old boy, 9-year-old boy, because I stayed in foster care from the age of 8 all the way up to the age of 14. So I didn't have her viewpoint, you know. But when
right.
she did get a chance to talk to me, she told me how she went through and how she wasn't an educated woman, you know. So they would take her room around people that talked over her head,
mm-hmm.
you know. And they talked to her about things that she really thought that these people really cared for her and was trying to help her. But all the time, they were setting up for failure.
See, now, so that goes to show. Now, that was 9 years old. That was back, what year was that?
That was like 1960.
1962, and in 1962, you are at this point, you are experiencing something that's still going on in 2011. Now, the other thing is that I wanted to chat about is there's still, and this is off of the youth violence, but how do you think this affects our youth violence? 500 families in the north side of Minneapolis are still without homes. They still have not been located a new house for either slumlords or whatever happened, 500 people. How do you think that impacts and creates more violence in our community?
Well, you know, like after the Civil War, they had those carpetbaggers that was going around, you know, confiscating properties, you know what I'm saying, and evicting people off their long home steads and stuff like this and stuff. After that tornado happened, VJ, we had those same vampires, those same parasitical economic opportunities going around throughout here in the north side of Minneapolis and feeding people lives and feeding people dreams and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And these people did so much harm to establish organizations that were out there helping people like Shiloh.
Mm-hmm.
Shiloh took a lot of hits because of that tornado. You know, because Shiloh was out there trying to help people, you know, but Shiloh wasn't equipped enough because Shiloh didn't have the word of the street to guide them to help, you know, process those different applications that was coming through, you know, because it was always these word of mouth organizations that were supposed to be responsible and supposed to be helping these people and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are getting all this bitterment of these kids that lost their personal properties and stuff like this. You know how hard it is to get your kid an Xbox. You know how hard it is to get your kid the cassettes and stuff to go to those games and stuff like that, how to get gym shoes and new starter jackets and these hats. When that tornado came through and stuff, you know what I'm saying, it's destroyed a whole lot of materialistic things that kids had to make themselves good about themselves. You know what I'm saying? So now they don't only have them things to make them feel good about themselves. They don't have a place to lay up here and call for this is my home, you know. So we had a lot of people and stuff that we just felt a little bit of how it felt over New Orleans when they had that big catastrophe.
Right.
You know, now we had people sleeping in Shiloh. We have people sleeping at the Salvation Army. We have people sleeping at various churches and other voluntary groups and stuff that was providing shelter and food for these for those displaced people and stuff. In the process of that, we have those people and stuff who are saying that prey on those situations. You know, the little stuff that I was able to snatch from my house, little stuff I was able to get for my child and stuff like this, you know, I got to carry on my back. We got to understand that we got just one parent in the homes and stuff like that there.
Mm-hmm.
We got women that was taking care of 2 and 3 babies in those shelters without the benefit of the father.
That's right.
You know, so we had those predators that was feeding on the vulnerabilities of those women. They were stealing the kids' stuff. You know what I'm saying? The women was sleep deprivation and stuff like this here and stuff. They had not only that concern. They had a concern of them not being able to go out to their jobs. You know what I'm saying? They didn't know who to leave their children with. It was a whole lot of things. So that contributes to a lot of the violence that these kids went through. Because see, now this reinforcing what those people that's trying to get those kids to lay up here and sell those drugs and to do other stupid stuff, join gangs and stuff like this here. Now, this here reemphasized within the kids' mind saying, well, hey, man, don't nobody care about me. I might as well get my own. And when you've heard it 1,000 times. When you go to those the juvenile homes and stuff like this here, and we go to these meetings, we get on these buses, and we go to these schools and stuff, the first thing these kids say, they say, I got to get mine.
That's right. That's exactly what they say, and they try to get theirs, and what they sometimes they do, they get got trying to get theirs, you know. And here's some of the statistics that we got in 2004. There are 4.5 million African-American men between the age of 15 and 29 living in the United States. 14% of all men in this age group, fewer than 8% of the young African-American men have graduated from college, compared to 17% of whites and 35% of Asians. We've got a critical problem there. So if you don't graduate, if you don't get education, that is going to be a problem. The other thing is the unemployment rate for young African-American men is over twice the rate of young white, Hispanic, and Asian men. In addition, fewer African-American men compared to white, Hispanic, and Asian men in the same age group. Over 20% of young African-American men live in poverty compared to 18% Hispanic, 12% Asian, and 10% for white folks. There's clearly a problem, and this is still going on today. We have a serious, serious problem with jobs, with job training, with entrepreneurship. Our corner stores are not run by us anymore. Our businesses are not run. Very few are run by us. Our economic engine, the dollar that comes into the African-American community, does not flow back into the African-American community. It goes into the Asian community or the Arab community or other communities, or the Latino community. Our dollars don't, you know, and sometimes even they want us to speak Spanish before we can order something.
Hey, all right, I'm just laughing. For our listening world, I was just laughing. That's a satirical laugh. You know, because it's so real. It's so real, man. You know, I mean, it's you know, you got to laugh at this stuff to keep from crying about this stuff, man. Because we had so many different people, man, saying Martin Luther King, man, going back to W.D. Du Bois, you know what I'm saying, going all the way back to Frederick Douglass, man, saying Carter G. Woodson, and all these other people, man, saying they laid up and sacrificed their lives, man, in order to lay up here and bring about the awareness that we're speaking about right now. And we're talking about men who lived in the 1800s. You know what I'm saying? And we're here in 2011, and we're still facing these same problems inside our communities, man. So people have got to start to wake up and understand that, man, this is not something, man, that we just casually talking about. This is not just something we're bumping our gums about because we're animated about this. We're dedicating our lives right now in order to get this information out there to you so you can lay up here. This, because the Bible tells us my people perish because of lack of understanding. You're saying lack of opening up their eyes and actually seeing and realizing what's happening to you, what's happening to your children. You know, because right now we're living in an age of communication, and right now we're failing our children because we do not understand. You know what I'm saying? We're not getting no black people of color, people of low economic financial means, you know, we've been notorious for just sitting back and saying, oh, woe is me, you know. Well, I can't never change nothing. Ain't never gonna never change. It's never gonna change for us if we stop just sitting back and not doing anything. We have so many different agencies that's out here that's trying to provide this education and this information for us and show us the road in which we got to take. And understand this, I know it's not going to be an easy road because a lot of harsh decisions are going to have to be made amongst our leadership in order to bring us back off into the 20th century. Yes. But remember, this is the Mad Dads Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and we have our meeting today from every Tuesday, our support group, and it's from 5 to 7, and we're having a Christian special today. We ask everyone who would like to come in, please to come and see us because we have all type of resources that we have available to you, and we're going to have a good time, and we're just going to have a day of celebrating whatever you want to celebrate. So, again, it's from 5 to 7.
But remember, it's Christmas.
It's Christmas.
So that's Christ, and it's a must.
Yeah, got to bring Christ with you.
So, you know, I mean, it's just important to know, man. I think so many times we've been asked to say, can you just say happy holidays? Can you just say, can you just say something different? Happy New Year. Can you say something else without putting Christ in there?
He wasn't born on Christmas Day. He was born in the man in September. Come on, man.
So I say, you know, we put Christ in there because it was important to do that. If you're thinking about being a mentor, if you'd like to be a mentor, why don't you call Minneapolis Cares at 612-370-9182. That's Minneapolis Cares at 612-370-9182. And join us with Big Brothers Big Sisters, Kinship of Greater Minneapolis, and Boulder Options to help the thousands of waiting kids that are waiting for you. You know, in the community of North Minneapolis is disappropriately affected by violence. And in 2010, the 15 communities in North Minneapolis comprised 18% of the city's population, but accounted for 60% of the city's murders. Youth and adults accounted for over 40% of the city's homicides, with the majority of the victims and perpetrators residing right in North Minneapolis.
That's a shame, man.
Now, 18% of the population, 40% of the homicides, 15 communities.
I mean, that's the same problem, VJ. I mean, you just came back from Miami, man. You know, and before that, you just came, you know, like y'all went to, where is that? Kansas City, man. And you see this same repetition all over the country. You know, I mean, we're being stacked on top of each other, man. And when we're being stacked up on top of each other without any form of release valve, you know, that when we was coming up and we was coming up as kids, man, we had playgrounds that we could play in. You know, that we had a neighborhood youth centers that we can go into. I remember, I don't know if they had it in Kansas City where you was at, but Chicago, neighborhood youth corps.
That's right.
You know, where they put you to work during the summertime. And in the wintertime, they took you to various places and stuff like this and stuff. You know, that we had different dance halls that we can go to. We had pool halls that we could go to. We had different activities that we could let up in and spread out ourselves. We had roller skating rinks and stuff like that there, man. You know what I'm saying? We had football leagues. We had basketball leagues and stuff like that that we played and stuff. We had sandlot football and all these. Decided to dissipate off into our community and stuff. So,
well, here's the thing. We say, and this is what the youth said. You said that disrespect from the opposite sex and financial needs are a big reason for their violence.
It is.
Talk a little bit about that.
Oh man, then. I mean, what are the two things that made you that make you a man in our community?
Respect.
No, it ain't. No, it ain't.
What is
it? You used to be able to box real good,
yeah.
or you was a player. You know what I'm saying? All the women look at you and stuff like
that. That's right. That's
stuff.
Right.
You
know yeah, you're
saying?
Right.
When we was coming up and stuff, those
that
were
was
two
respect.
Things. That was respect. That's how you got your respect. You got your respect because you can stand up there, you can box somebody, man, saying and things like that. You know? Or you was a player. All the girls like you. You was a pretty boy. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, those things, everybody envied you and stuff like this. It was a form of respect. You know what I'm saying? That was how you lived and engaged your masculinity. But now we got women that's hating on men. We got these 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids and stuff and saying that's having, at the age of 20, they got three babies. You know? And at the age of 20, they're calling their babies bitches and punks and whores and I'll slap you, I'll kick you, I'll beat you and things like this here and stuff. You know what I'm saying? They grow up hating women. They listen to the music they listen to. It's bitch that, bitch this. You know, all this other crazy stuff that's be coming up out of their mouth. They go to bed hearing this music, beating while their people that's laying up in the kitchen, smoking blunts and stuff like this. They wake up in the morning, getting ready to go on a school bus. And the first thing she put on when she get up out of bed is F this, F that. You know what I'm saying? Bitches ain't nothing. This ain't nothing. Men ain't this. Men ain't that. So when they come up and stuff and saying, you know what I'm saying, they're going to emulate that which they around, them and their parents. So the first thing they let being said about a woman is what? Is a woman is a woman ain't no good. And they look for that.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. Let me add something to that right now. Because the other thing that young people said, poor role models and family dysfunction, is the reason why they have so much violence in their lives. And so the one thing I wanted to add to that is that how did we go from pyramids to projects? See, because when you talk about pyramids, that was what we came from. We come
right.
from the pyramids. The pyramids is what we were all about. The pyramids is where we originated. That pyramid on that dollar bill, that represents the African people. That pyramid don't represent what they say it represents. The
Amen.
True thing is that pyramid on that dollar bill represents the history of the African people. And if the truth were told about that pyramid, some folks don't know how to make that pyramid. We know how to make it. So how do we go from that to projects? The system has done that to us.
You know.
And in order for us to get strong and to really make a difference in our community, we have to be better role models, and our families cannot be dysfunctional.
Amen. That's why, you know, VJ, you know, I'm so proud to be a mad dad because, you know, it's an image. It's an image. You know, I don't know a lot of people out there in radio land, you know, I mean, y'all might think, man, you know, just because that, you know, we call ourselves mad dads and stuff that we think we're special. And that is right. We think we are very special. You know, we think, man, saying that we have to live and be a reflective image of the things that are coming up out of our mouths, you know. We want our children to be able to walk up on us and say, well, hey, man, that's a mad dad, you know. See, because that's how we got to start putting it down. Because, see, like right now, your kid can walk out the door and say, well, hey, that's a gangbanger. That's a dope thing. That's a dope thing. That's a dope dealer. You know what I'm saying? That's a thief. That's a hustler. That's a prostitute, you know. See, we're trying to let him become a peculiar part of our community, something that used to be a part of our neighborhood. We want to bring it back. You know what I'm saying? We're the ones that are trying to bring the neighbor back into the hood. You know? And in order for to do that, we have to be a reflective image of what we're talking about. People have got to see that we not only talk this talk, that we walk this walk. You know? And I'm not ashamed to lay up here and claim to be a mad dad today. Because this is what we need. We need more successful people that instead of laying up here leaving this community, they got to stay in and make that social sacrifice to lay up here and show that you can lay up here and come out from North, that you can come from Emily Gray, or you can come from Lucy Langley, and you can come from any other public institution of learning. If in North Minneapolis, and still be successful, and still be a responsible part of your community.
The other thing that our kids are saying, electronic media and weapons are two of the biggest things that go along with boredom. They're so bored. They don't have, and you know, we talk to kids today and say, man, I'm bored. It's a big word they use a lot. I don't get a chance to use that word. I really never had a chance. I don't care what I'm doing. I'm not bored. Boredom.
I was born out of prison.
Right. But once you're out here doing what you need to do, there's so much to do. You can get overworked.
You got that right.
And, you know, there's so many times I lay down on my bed, and I don't even get to lay the right way. I would just wake up and be like, dang, I didn't take my socks off, you know, because I was so tired that I didn't really prepare myself to lay down and get. I was not bored. I was tired. I was wore out. But I felt satisfied that I contributed something to the community. And so many of our kids don't know about contributing. If you ain't paying them, they ain't doing nothing.
Right.
They'd rather be bored. But I found out through a blessing that when you volunteer to give back, God will give you something. He will give you something in a big way, in a mighty way. So the boredom, electronic media, and the weapons that are available are a big problem with our youth and violence.
It is, BJ. Because, like, again, I'm taking it back to old school. When we was coming up, we used to have to make stuff. You know what I'm saying? If you wanted to skateboard, you had to lay up the entire old pair of skates down, nail them to a piece of 2x4, and shoot them down the street with that, you know, would you a skateboard? If you wanted, you have a clubhouse and stuff like this here stuff, man. Then you had to learn how to repair stuff. You had to learn how to put a hammer on top of a nail, man. You know what I'm saying? Now these kids live in this virtual reality world, you know what I'm saying, where everything and stuff and holds no responsibility because you can just push a button and stuff and start all over again. This is the same way they started to live in and start writing to letters. You ever seen some of those kids and stuff saying they'd be texting and the words and the abbreviations and stuff they'd be using? They use them same things on their test papers. I said, what is all this? And my grandkids, I look at them, I said, what are you trying to say? Papa, you know, that means that blah, blah, blah. I said, no, man. And I said, you can't put that down. Oh, the teachers, they know. No, that shouldn't be acceptable for no school for you to lay up here and say to tell me that of those 5-6 different abbreviations that you put down there make a whole sentence. No. You know? So I can understand how come they're getting bored. I can see you, here go a parent, spend $57 for a video game. Kid turned the game over in 3 days. Now he ain't got nothing else to do. You know? Because he don't know how to lay up here and use his own ingenuity and his own brain to lay up here and entertain himself. And that's crazy. And it's dangerous.
It's very dangerous. And when we talk about our youth and solutions to our youth violence, one of the solutions is the many things that we've already discussed. I want to go back to that. Is it not letting our kids get bored? Stop allowing them to witness so much violence. Be better role models. And, you know, matter of fact, if your neighbor kids don't have a role model, you know what, man, stop watching so many games. You don't have to watch every Viking game. Spend a little time with the kids next door. Take them to the park. Show them how to play ball. Show them how to do some things. Show them how to be proactive. Take a little time. Brother, you were put on this land to be the king of this land.
But, BJ, what about those brothers, man, saying to say, hey, I don't even beat my woman. But he calls her bitches and hoes and all the other stuff. He verbally abuses her. You think that's worse than beating her?
Well, you know, when you talk about domestic violence comes in all forms, sexual, verbal, and physical, you know, and mental, you know, because I can play games with you and put you on, you know, some guys are so good, you know, some guys are good in the pimp game and some guys are good in the psychic game, like psychologically. I can play so much with your head that I can destroy not only you but the kids. And so, you know, there is no worse or better. Now, if I give you a black eye, everybody sees that. But if I torture you so bad that you don't want to come out of the house, nobody sees that. But right. Which one's worse? Ain't neither one of them worse. The black eye, you can see that. But the mental torture, you can't see that because I won't come out of the house. I know a lady, a man that came to Mad Dad and said, help me. I said, what's wrong? He's got control over me. He takes my money. He gets high, smoking crack. He got other women in the bed with us. But I'm so scared of him. He said he's going to kill me. I don't know what to do.
I mean, does that reflect on your children?
You think a kid is not going to... Now, when that kid comes to me and says, man, I want to kill him, what kind of thoughts is that kid having? I want to kill my daddy.
But do he go to school and jump on the kids mauling themselves?
He do more than that. He go to school He beat on folks as soon as you say something. He wants to beat on folks. He wants to get mad at the teacher. Everything, all that drama, he takes right to the school, to the church, and everywhere else he goes, to the playground, wherever he goes, he takes all that drama, Gil. And how do you know? Because I know. I was one of them kids, and so were you, Gil.
That's right.
You took all that drama wherever you went because of the bad role modeling and the dysfunctional family. And some of y'all think it's funny when you got your kids doing signs for gangs and you dress them like gang members, and you think it's cute. It's dangerous, and you're setting them up for death and destruction, and you shouldn't do that. Remember, our support group is every Tuesday. You listen to Mad Dad Radio with myself, V.J. Smith, and my co-host, Mr. Gil Baggett.
Hey!
And we do this every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. We want to thank you. Remember, write this address down, and every Tuesday you can come join us and be a part of it. 3023 4th Avenue South from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. We have a support group. Today we're doing a special thing, celebrating the Christmas season, celebrating Christ and how good he's been to us, celebrating the fact that we are here and still alive, celebrating the fact that so many families didn't make it, but we did. And we're honoring those families today, and we know it's going to be tough for them, but we're hoping that we can give some kind of relief to some of those families that have been struggling with some of those things. And our young people, today we've been talking about you because we want you to understand that we love you so much and we want to try to help others come up with solutions to help you stay around, you know, to help you so they won't have to keep going to those 14-year-old funerals and those 17-year-old funerals. And those funerals cause trauma. Just on Sunday, there was a mother at Shiloh Temple. Her son has been shot, and he is paralyzed from the neck down. And their job said, you can take all the time you want off. Stay off as long as you want. We just ain't going to pay you. And she said, I don't have a choice but to be by his side.
That's right.
Now, he doesn't want to live. He doesn't want to live. He doesn't want to be paralyzed.
Yeah.
He said he would rather die than lay there and only be able to move his neck, Gil.
Yeah.
And his head.
Yeah.
He'd rather die.
Yeah.
But his mother said, hold on, baby.
Yeah.
Because there's a testimony in there.
That's right. Because you can make it's going to change.
It's going to be a testimony. So, Gil, tell them once again where we're going to meet at, what time we're going to meet, and what our meeting's about.
Well, today we're going to be meeting at 3023 4th Avenue South. And today we're going to have a festive ceremony. We're going to be just celebrating the gifts of Christmas, the spirits of Christmas, the spirit of fellowship and brothership. We're going to just be celebrating just the joy that our community is still here. We're celebrating that you got a job, that you ain't got a job. We're celebrating that, you know, that we've come together to bring about some peace and some joy in all our lives, even if it's just for a fleeting moment. And then we're going to be right here at 3023 4th Avenue South at from 5 to 7 o'clock. Please come out and experience this with us.
You heard it. You heard it from Mr. Gil Baggett. He came through Chicago through by way of Mississippi.
Mississippi.
What part of Mississippi?
I came through way of Monticello.
Monticello?
Monticello. That's way down there in the Delta.
Okay, way down there in the Delta.
Yeah, well, catfish walk on the ground.
Where the catfish walk on the ground?
Yep.
Okay, well, we something just happened here. I have, sounds like we lost. Brother Gil Baggett once again has done something.
Every time I touch this cord, man, something happens with it.
You can't do it, though. Okay. Are we here? Okay.
We're back on?
Testing 1, 2. Oh yeah, we on. Okay, hey, Brother Gil Baggett, go ahead.
All right, I'm from the Delta, man. Back there, like I know y'all ain't never heard of fish walking on land, but I tell you, man, saying like certain parts from about April to about, you know, mid May, you know, when the rivers and the creeks overflow, catfish come across the road, man, to get the deeper water. You just got to be there with a bucket and you just pick them up.
That's down in Mississippi.
In Mississippi.
That's a beautiful thing, man.
Yep.
Now, while we're talking about Mississippi and we're talking about how great Mississippi is, we want to just give a shout out, and hopefully next week we can get somebody calling from Mississippi. But thanks for calling in, and thanks for being a part of Blog Talk Radio with Mad Dads. God bless you.